Okay, so I'm not sure whether this will be a one-day topic or two-day topic. We'll see how long it takes. But it's a topic that's particularly sprawling. If you're talking about anything in Moed, it extends to all kinds of Yom Tovim and Shabbos issues. And what's also interesting to see is that, and we'll spend some time on this towards the end, is that as much as this seems to be a general concept by all of Shabbos and Yontif, just about every single Yontif has a quirk. And pretty much every single Yontif is a
quirk.
Yeah, well, that's true, right? See, if you count Shavuot Shel Pesach, but that's why we counted as two. Okay, so if you want to count Shavuot Shel Pesach as a separate Yontif, then you're right that it may be the only one that doesn't have a unique aspect to it. But you could say there's a different din for Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Shmini Atzeres, Pesach, Shavuos, and Tisha B'Av. Each one has its own discussion. So maybe we'll end Shabbos. So we'll try to look a little bit at some of those differences and what they possibly reflect. So first off, we have a Gemara in the Sechas Rosh Hashanah. And thank you again, Dr. Belagon, for making the sheets. But the Gemara picks up on the fact that there seems to be something surprising about the way the Torah refers to Yom Kippur in terms of the date. The Torah makes a reference here in Parshas Emor, V'nisim esnafshe seichem batishot, that you shall afflict yourselves on the 9th. So that's surprising, because pretty much most poskim hold that Yom Kippur is on the 10th. So to find a reference to Yom Kippur on the 9th, it's the kind of thing we want to get right.
What do you mean by most poskim?
I'm joking. All poskim hold Yom Kippur on the 10th. So that's the kind of thing we want to get right. We don't want to be fasting on the wrong day. There's not much wiggle room when it comes to Yom Kippur. We're talking about the Nisakaris, and we're talking about something that's hard to do once. We can't really have much room to move around. And it is a famous discussion in terms of Yom Kippur that you would think that Yom Kippur perhaps should be observed for 2 days, because we have a concept of Seikah D'Yoma, and nowadays it's more of a established into Rabbanan rather than expression of Suffolk. But once upon a time it was because we're not sure what the day is, and you would think that perhaps we should fast 2 days for Yom Kippur, because we apply that Suffolk to most other Yom Tovim Nahat Torah. And Yom Kippur, as we said, is particularly chomer. And sometimes if something is late enough in the month, maybe there's room to say that there shouldn't be a Seikah D'Yoma. But here it's a little strange, because you have Sukkot, which is observed later. And so we assume that Sukkot is subject to a Suffolk. So certainly Yom Kippur 5 days earlier should be subject to a Suffolk. So we intuit that the issue is that we can't fast that long. We don't have that much room to fast for 48 hours. And that's an idea that you find in the Talmud Yerushalmi. The Talmud Yerushalmi says that we can't apply this concern. We can't fast 2 days for Yom Kippur because it's dangerous. It's sakanas nefashos to fast that much. The issue has come up, especially in the past century, concerning the famous international dateline question, and especially during the Holocaust, when Bachram from the Mir Yeshiva ended up, and others ended up in Japan, which is subject to a question as to how the dateline is applied. So the issue came up as machlokus between the Chazon Ish and the Chiyom Michal Tkachinsky as to when to observe Yom Kippur, and there were those who took the plunge and fasted 2 days Yom Kippur. This is not an easy thing to do, so we want to get this right. So what do we do with the fact that
the original Seikah D'Yoma, when it was the real Seikah D'Yoma?
It's a good question. That's what the Yerushalmi seems to be addressing, that that's not, it wasn't physically possible. It's not recommended. It's not a
Suffolk. So you pick and choose.
Well, that we assume that it's the first day. It's not a Suffolk that we can afford to, not something we can afford to indulge, because of what's involved. So what do we do with the fact that the Torah tells us here that we should fast on the 9th, and that throws everything into disarray if we're assuming that Yom Kippur is on the 10th? So the interesting thing is the Gemara actually has two separate answers to this. And we're not really talking about the other one. We'll just mention it now in this context. Maybe if we have extra time at the end, we can talk about the other one. But just so we know, we give him the answer the Gemara gives elsewhere, first in Masechus Brachos on Daf Ches, is that this is a reference to one of my favorite mitzvahs, the obligation to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. The Gemara says that Kol Ochel V'Shosa V'Tisha Ma'ala V'Kasav Ki'ilu Hutzana Tisha V'Asiri, that whoever eats and drinks on the ninth of Tishrei, he's credited, so to speak, as if he fasted both days, which itself brings up a whole interesting discussion that seems to say that there is some reason we should be fasting 2 days, and that instead of fasting, so we'll eat on one day, it'll count as two, which is itself a whole fascinating topic to discuss. Maybe we'll have some time to get to it. The Rosh Maseches Yuma takes up the question of why it is that the Gemara has two different answers to this question. It's very likely that both dinim are considered to be dinim and hatorah, still derived from the same pasuk. It's also interesting that they could, in theory, be in conflict with each other. But the other answer that we're talking about today is the one the Gemara gives in Maseches Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah on Daf Tes and Aleph, it's the first source here, that what does this tell you? That maschil mesana mibod yom, that we should apparently fast while it is still daytime. And this is to teach us melamed shemosifin michal al hatoresh, that we don't just wait until Yentiv starts, but we bring it in a bit earlier. We fast a little bit while it's still the previous day. So therefore, when the Torah makes reference to fasting on the ninth, it's not telling us that we have to fast the entire night. It's not talking about the 48-hour fast. But there is some period of time on the ninth when, presumably a very short period of time, but it will technically be the ninth of Tishrei that will become grafted onto Yom Kippur. So a little bit of fasting onto the ninth to extend the fast, to extend the experience of Yom Kippur. So in theory, just again, just a note, maybe we'll see if we come back to this or not, but there could be a conflict between these two dinim. It's discussed in Poskim, it's discussed in the Machzor Avraham and the Ksav Sofer and others, that in theory you could find yourself in a situation where you haven't had a chance yet to eat on Erev Yom Kippur, and now there isn't really enough time to both eat on Erev Yom Kippur and start the fast early. So you could, in theory, have the two halachos learned out from the same pasuk be in conflict with each other. So how do you navigate that conflict? That was a big machlokas achronim. Maybe we'll come to it later, but just to note, it's interesting, two different halachas, poskim seem to maintain, with some variation, that they're both a din min ha-Torah, they're both a genuine drasha from the pasuk. And besides the fact that they're both learned out from the same pasuk, they could, in theory, argue with each other. They could, in theory, be in conflict with each other, and then have to discuss what you do. But the view of most Rishonim, not all, as we'll see, a very notable exception, but the view of most Rishonim is that this is a din min ha-Torah that applies to every Shabbos and Yantif. The Gemara is actually going to go on to talk about Shemitah also. There's a concept of Tosefet Shvi'is, which is applied a little bit differently. But in terms of Yantif, next Gemara is not here, but it's on our topic, but in terms of Yantif, so the Gemara is telling us essentially the way most Rishonim understand it, that every Shabbos, every Yantif will start early. Because the phrase is so abstract, so it sounds like any time we have Kodesh, so we take a little bit from the Chol and we start it early. So the most notable exception is the Rambam. Like the Rambam in Hilchos Shchisos HaAsur, this is source number two. So he tells us that specifically in reference to Yom Kippur, Sarach lahosif michal kodesh b'knisaso uvitziaso, that we should add onto the kedusha of Yom Kippur at the beginning and at the end, which is a sometimes neglected part of the discussion, that it's not just the beginning, it's also the end. Shenamar v'nisim v'shnafsa sheichem v'tish l'chodesh b'erev. Kolomar, what does that tell us? Haschel etzom v'chisanos me'erev tisha hasamuch la'asiri. And again, also at the end, v'chem v'yitziya shor v'inu yav ma'at v'lei le'achar asar samuch la'asiri shenamar v'erev ad erev tish l'sushet v'sechem. So, how does he understand the application of this pasuk? That we should begin to fast from the evening, from before the evening, from the day before, from the 9th close to the 10th. So all he really records is a minimalist reading of this pasuk. That the pasuk is only talking about one thing very specifically, and while other Rishonim, this is still a little variation of Torah somewhere in between, but most other Rishonim understand this as referring to Kedusha in general, that sentence, Masikim Echal HaKodesh, he just records exactly what's in the pasuk. What's in the pasuk? Inui Yom HaKippur. So that's two limitations, that he only applies it to Yom Kippur. And even within Yom Kippur, we could divide Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur has, broadly speaking, two components to it. It has a component of inui of fasting, and it has the component of Shvisa Mimalacha, of Yantav Shabbosan part that it shares with other such days. So the Rambam doesn't tell us that we abstain from Malacha early. He says, just this one reference, that the fast starts early. So it's a very minimalist reading of the pasuk. All that the pasuk refers to is what's here, excuse me, but expanding it not only to Av Yom Tov, but even within Yom Kippur, that much he doesn't tell us.
No, but when you said that others are expanding it to Kedusha in general, mm-hmm. even not Kedusha Zman, for instance, Kedushat Makom.
Well, we only know so far Kedusha Zman, and as we alluded to before, the Gemara has two types, the type of the day and the type of the year. In terms of Shemitah, also has the concept of Tosefes. So we only have it really in the context here of Zman. But still, it's an extension to say that it applies to all other types of Kedushas of Zman. While, again, the Rambam is limiting here to the pasuk that says that we start Yom Kippur fast early. Now, does he acknowledge a concept of Tosefes Midrabbanan? And so it sounds like he doesn't believe it's a mitzvah in our Torah. The other Rishonim believe it's a mitzvah in our Torah, and we have to assume that he does not agree. He doesn't talk about that. There was a whole debate in the Achronim that the Meshech Chachma talks about in his commentary on Chumash, and the Vilna Gaon is a commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, and the Avnei Nezer, the Shuvah, has a whole discussion. Should we assume that the Rambam does agree there is a concept of Tosefes Midrabbanan? So a number of the Achronim thought there was such an idea. And others, and there's some discussion about this in the Nosek Kalim, actually the Nosek Kalim to this Rambam Hilchos Shabbos and others, that the fact is he doesn't talk about it at all. So we're not necessarily so confident that he believes it exists Midrabbanan. Maybe he believes it doesn't exist at all. So we're not really 100% sure what the Rambam's view is regarding that, whether there is Tosefes Midrabbanan. All we know is that he doesn't seem to hold that there is Tosefes Min HaTorah by your average Shabbos, your average Yontif, and even by the Shvisa Mimulacha of Yom Kippur.
But there's an opinion that even Midoraita he accepted, of Chaim.
That he accepts Shabbos.
Shabbat.
Yes, it's a little difficult because he's not. We'll talk about that a little bit in the end. We have to, ultimately, this will probably be a topic for tomorrow, but we have to ultimately, the kind of elephant in the room, which we're going to avoid for a little while because it involves other factors, is how does he deal with Kiddush? So that draws on some issues like that, so maybe we'll see if we get that today or tomorrow. But for now, we'll work off the assumption he doesn't seem to have a concept at all. So the question is like this. The question that we'll try to focus on for a little while is a two-part question. One is, what are we accomplishing with Tosefes? What happens when we start Shabbos early? Let's say Shabbos would have normally started at 6:42. And we are going to start Shabbos at 5:30. What are we accomplishing? And the question that immediately, I think, flows out of that question is, what is the Tameh HaMitzvah, so to speak? What is the reason for doing this? I think they automatically link to each other, that what it is we're doing will automatically suggest at least a theoretical reason for doing it. So there are essentially what seems to be two schools of thought. On the one hand, there is a school that we could call the ambitious school that believes we really have quite a lot of potential when it comes to Tosefes Shabbos, because that school maintains that we can actually convert Friday afternoon to Shabbos. Now, you've heard of third Friday night to Shabbos. So that God already did. We have to cooperate. But this is about turning Friday afternoon into Shabbos, which God so far didn't do, right? He made Shabbos start when it gets actually dark. And here, the space which is essentially Friday afternoon. Halachically, it's not radically different than Tuesday morning. You know, there are certain dinim, but certainly on a level of Manatora, it's not radically different than Tuesday morning. And apparently, according to this school, I can convert that. Yeah, a simple Jew in Teaneck, New Jersey can convert that into Shabbos. So we'll call that the ambitious school. So that's quite an accomplishment. It's actually bestow Kedusha Shabbos onto a time that isn't Shabbos. That's pretty impressive.
If it's off the topic, I'll withdraw the question.
Sure.
So what happens if you add on and then you do some kind of halacha in the time period?
So two aspects to that question. One of which, it's not at all off the topic, it's very much on the topic. We will come to it later, so I'll say that. But there's two aspects to that question, I think. One is that you want to know what is your status in terms of the Avera, I guess. And the other is there any way you can reverse accepting Shabbos? Since, theoretically, it's only Shabbos because you decided to bring it in, you have equal control in terms of changing your mind. So that second question is one that we'll come to in more detail later. Again, we'll say it tomorrow, we'll see, but sometime later, that's an important question. The first question is also an important question, it's easier, so we'll just mention it for a second now. It says it's clear from the Gemara that it's not treated the same way, that we don't have the onesh of Shabbos itself. So the Gemara mentions it specifically in the context of Yom Kippur, that if somebody breaks the fast of Yom Kippur, is Chayv Kares, that does not apply to the time of Tosefos. The Gemara derives that from the Pasuk, using the word Etzem, that it's only Etzem, and we'll see this comes up in other contexts, that Etzem Hayom is a reference to the day itself, not to any addition onto the day. So therefore, for the purposes of Onesh, that does not apply to Shabbos itself. That applies to the additional part. Now, the second question, what if you want to change your mind, we'll talk about that in more detail. So for that purpose, so one idea is that I am actually converting Shabbos into Shabbos, Erev Shabbos into Shabbos, and that we'll call the ambitious school. The second school is not that ambitious. Second school doesn't think that we have that much power. Kadosh Baruch Hu declares when Shabbos is. I can't tell you that it's Shabbos right now on Tuesday morning, and I can't tell you that it's Shabbos Friday afternoon either. It's going to be Shabbos when it is. We'll call for now, we'll explain this phrase in a second, we'll call this the pragmatic school. Pragmatic school is not as ambitious, doesn't think that that's possible. So they essentially will maintain that you are basically just pretending that it's Shabbos. That you can do. Right? You can abstain from halacha at any given time. If I wanted to for a half hour right now, act like it was Shabbos, I could presumably do that. So I could do that Friday afternoon as well, and apparently that's the mitzvah here. So that's hard to understand. Why do we need to pretend? So the truth is, to reflect for a second on the likely tamei hamitzvos and the likely reason, so I think both of these views of what's happening suggest their own reasoning. That if we believe that we're adding on to the Kedusha, so then we could see what we're trying to do. If you understand, we could make up a theory as to what the purpose is. That we're pro-Kedusha, we believe in holiness, so we want to show that we're not passive about it, we don't just wait till it hits us in the face, but we want to welcome it in actively. So therefore, as a gesture towards Kedusha, as an involvement in the process, as we know from other sources about to talk about the Erev Shabbos Jew who sits with his talis on anxiously awaiting, so we want to be a partner with the Kadosh Baruch Hu in sanctifying the day, and we're apparently given that power. If we agree that power exists, we could understand why there would be a mitzvah to utilize it, why there would be a mitzvah to show we're interested in the Kedusha rather than just having it begrudgingly fall upon us when we're not ready. But if we maintain that that's not what's happened, but that we are actually pretending, so then Why would we do that? What's the accomplishment of pretending? So the answer seems to be suggested by this Medrash here. This is the source number 4. That the Medrash addresses a pasuk. That part's not here, but the answer is here. That there's a famous question that Chazal asked in a number of places, and there are many different answers to the question, some in Chazal and some elsewhere. So why is it that the pasuk refers to Shabbos, refers to the world being created, Kadosh Baruch Hu finishing his melacha on the seventh day? Don't we assume that he did not work on the seventh day, that he finished it in 6 days and rested on the seventh? So why should the Torah give us the impression that he finished it on the seventh day? So there are different approaches in Chazal and elsewhere. In one place, Chazal tell us that the creation of Menucha was also a creation. But here, this Medrash seems to suggest a different approach. That humanity is not able to perceive things the same way that Kadosh Baruch Hu is. So even working off the premise that Kadosh Baruch Hu is resting on that original Shabbos, so he could still work up until the last gazillion second before Shabbos and stop that gazillion second and then begin Shabbos. And Liatzir, if we had been there in that first week, if we had been observing this, it would look to our human eyes like he was working on Shabbos, because we can't distinguish. We don't have that type of perception that we can perceive that exact gazillion second when it is. So to us it would look as if he was working on Shabbos. So that's why the Torah, talking B'lashon B'nei Adam, makes reference to Melacha happening, creation of the world happening on Shabbos, when really it was finished before Shabbos, but we can't see where that border is. So working off that, that's hard to...
It's a strange answer.
It is a little bit of a strange answer. It's but the point that the Medrash brings out of it here, which is relevant to us, is that so we who cannot perceive this difference, so we have to act differently. And what do we have to do? So therefore we have to add on from the Chol onto the Kodesh. In contrast to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who knows exactly when it starts, so he can have the tiniest distinction, the tiniest space between one and the other. But we who don't have that capacity, we have to add on Michal HaKodesh. So what does that suggest? What does that suggest? That suggests, sorry, that the idea of adding on Michal HaKodesh is something that we do as a concession to our human frailty, that we can't tell exactly when Shabbos starts. So, sorry about that. So, therefore, we have to start Shabbos early.
Can I ask you, what was the source that you just cited that said that HaKadosh Baruch Hu works into the seventh day? Is that from the Torah?
That's from the pasuk that refers to finishing creation on the seventh day. We say it in Kiddush. Right, so that's the way, not the way we understand it. We only assume the world was created in 6 days. So Chazal deal with this in different places in a different way. It is that we have the impression that it was the seventh day. So this is one of the approaches that we find. So this seems to suggest that essentially this is a function of Suffolk, right? That basically we don't know exactly when Shabbos starts, so we can't afford to go right up into the border. We have to create a buffer zone. And that would be true before we got into two other levels of discussion. Right? That first of all, the Gemara says that there's already a topic about when Shabbos starts because of the whole question of Bein Hashmashos, the whole question of Shkia and Seis, right? That the process of night, so it's not clear when exactly night begins and when one transfers into the other. So that was already a topic. And then, not our topic for today, but the whole machlokas between what's colloquially known as the Gaonim and Rebbe Natan, let's say, in terms of when Shkia is and when Seis is. those are questions aside, right? So first of all, we have built into every Shabbos a suffix is to learn start. That's called Bein Hashmashos. We have a Machlokas Arishonim and a Machlokas Hapronim when Bein Hashmashos is. So already there's two levels of suffix about when to bring in Shabbos. So let's say for a second we'll skip all that and we'll say we know that Shabbos starts 6:42. Let's say somehow we were able to resolve when the Monday of Shabbos is between the whole Shki and Seis question and when Shki and Seis is, and we decided on 6:42. We don't know when 6:42 is. How can we be so confident that we could figure out exactly when that happens? So we have a third level of suffix as to when Shabbos is really starting. So because of that, apparently we have to create a buffer zone. We can't just start at the last minute. So that's interesting, right? Because this kind of sounds like it is a type of siag. It's a type of a safeguard. So does that challenge our perception, which we attributed to most Rishonim, that Tosefta Shabbos is B'nai Torah? It works very well if we take a Rambam view, what we might call Rambam, let's say A, if we assume within the Rambam that there is Tosefis Midrabanan. So this works very well with such an opinion. Oh, what do we mean that it's in Midrabanan? That Chazal told us to not let it come to the last minute, it's too dangerous, so we should start early. So that would work very well. Okay, it's a din drabanan, fine. But if we maintain it is a din minat Torah, so is it inconsistent for us to call it a siag, basically? So not necessarily. There is a very well-known and fascinating essay of Rav Yosef Engel. Rav Yosef Engel was one of the great Talmudists of the last century, and the author of many, many classic and fundamental svarim. So one of his svarim is called Lekach Tov. So in the Sefer Lekach Tov, he has an essay, it's Klal Ches in the Lekach Tov, which is entitled Imotzinu Siag Minator, or something like that. That the concept of a siag, of a safeguard, which we normally associate with the role of rabbinic halacha, that essentially you have the Torah, and then you have the rabbis coming and telling us build a safeguard around the Torah and make gezeiros to Rabbanan. So is that exclusively a role of the Rabbanan, or does the Torah itself do it? Are there times when the Torah itself adds on a din to protect another din? So Joseph Engel says, yeah, well, let's think about it for a minute, and he comes up with 18, 19 examples. Most of the examples, almost all of them, are not unanimous. If you take one view in Rishonim here, one view in Rishonim there, you come up with a possibility. There was also another Sefer, the Shuvas Yad Sofer. It was written by Rav Moshe Sofer. It was not the Chassam Sofer. It was a descendant of the Chassam Sofer. So he has, independently, he has a Tshuva where he discusses the same questions. He has his own list. And then there are Ha'aris, then the contemporary printing of the Sefer. So there are Ha'aris in the bottom, I think, from his grandson. So he adds on more to the list. So between these three mechaber, you put everything together, you have a decent sized list. Again, each one is a little bit of a discussion, but it's unlikely that they're all not following. Probably a few of them, even if you disagree with some of them, you'll agree with others. So it's probably upheld that there is a concept of a siag min haTorah, that you can have a concept of min haTorah that is there to protect something else. And just if we're holding in Pesachim, so right from the very beginning of Mizrachis Pesachim, so there is one of these views that the Ran entertains the possibility in the first daf in Pesachim that the reason there is a prohibition of Bal Yira, Bal Yimotzei, we're not allowed to own Chametz on Pesach, which is a din min haTorah. Nonetheless, the Ran says that maybe, discussed in the context of a few other things, but that maybe the reason we have such a din is really because of eating chametz. The Torah doesn't want us to eat chametz on Pesach, that's an esekaris, and to protect us from doing that, we also have a din not to own chametz on Pesach. How come there's no din not to own pork? At least in the Torah, there's no such prohibition. So two approaches, either because the Yisr Kares is more severe, or because it's more dangerous, because 51 weeks a year we have chametz. So if you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, if you happen to have pork in your house, it's not so likely that in your bleary-eyed experience you'll make a pork sandwich for yourself, because you never have a pork sandwich. But it is possible you'll make a peanut butter sandwich for yourself. And so therefore, we have to maybe say, you shouldn't own any chametz on Pesach. So that's one of the examples that here the Ran seems to be saying, that that's a gzeirah min haTorah. So this could be an example as well. And indeed, Rabbi Yosef Engel has this on his list. This is, if you look up in that list, and In Lekach Tov, this is there early on, that one of the things that may reflect this idea is the concept of Tosefa Shabbos, because Tosefa Shabbos, according to most, is a din min haTorah, and yet this Medrash suggests that it has a gzeira component to it. It's more of a positive gzeira. One could then open up the question, what exactly does Tosefa Shabbos represent? It may also reflect the two possibilities we mentioned a few minutes ago. Is this essentially a set of prohibitions that we will abstain from halacha, so it's a gezeira in that sense, or is it a more positively oriented concept that we will add on to Shabbos, we'll create an extension of Shabbos? So it could be that it's not only a gezeira min haTorah, but it's a positive gezeira, so to speak. So whether to view Tosefa Shabbos as one big mitzvah saseh, or a number of los saseis, so to speak, is a question, and it affects a few other things also. There's a whole discussion to what extent women are chayiv in Tosefa Shabbos. Should we see it as a mitzvah saseh shazman grama? How should we look at it? So there is a lot of discussion about that. It's interesting because this whole view, in theory, this I don't believe is in Rav Yosef Engel's list, but the other half of the other din from this pasuk could also be such a discussion, because the question of why do we eat on Erev and Kippur. So I see we're almost out of time, so just mention it quickly, that there is a view in Rishonim, and the Ritva expresses it particularly in a relevant way for us here, that the reason we eat on Erev and Kippur is so we shouldn't have problems with the fast on Yom Kippur itself. And the Ritva has a language, Shlo Yavo Lidei Dechiyas Inui, that we shouldn't come to a situation where we're unable to fast because we didn't eat enough the day before. So one could maybe argue that's also somewhat within this type of perspective, that that's again a din in the Torah, and maybe it's the Torah giving us this din to protect us from being in a situation where we have to violate another din in the Torah. So just as an interesting idea, that maybe both of the dinim which come out of this pasuk, which could probably both be min haTorah, could theoretically conflict with each other, we mentioned before, may also both have room on this list as being some type of gzeira to protect at least Yom Kippur and maybe other days as well. So these two perspectives as to what exactly is going on with Tosefos, what happens and why does it happen, I think the two reasons then suggest themselves, that if we believe we're adding on to Kedusha, that's a positive idea, and if we believe that it's kind of pretend, that's understandable as a gezeira, so that has a much greater impact on the nature of the day itself. So I guess, God willing, we will continue that tomorrow. Okay, Yeshikala.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. What's your name?
I don't show.